Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The first COVID-19 vaccine was developed and given emergency approval by the FDA in under a year. It's a record in U.S. vaccine history that could mark the beginning of the end of a pandemic that has taken the lives of more than 300,000 Americans. As other vaccines gain emergency use authorization, public health experts hope that the U.S. can reach 300 million doses by mid-2021. But yesterday was cause for celebration as the first doses were administered across the country, including in Ohio. USA Today health reporter Karen Weintraub has been covering vaccine development and rollout. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
I'm trying to figure out how it's working. So, and how many people will be vaccinated in this first push? Are they vaccinating people with that first dose, then holding over the doses that they need for that second dose?
Right. So they want to make sure that they have enough to give people the second dose. So of the first 6.4 million doses, 2.9 million are going out this week, I believe. 2.9 are being held back for those same people to get the vaccine in 3 weeks. And then the balance is a reserve just in case something horrible happens and they lose some vaccine.
You said in 3 weeks they need the second dose.
That's correct. For the Pfizer vaccine is given two doses 21 days apart. The Moderna vaccine, which is likely to be authorized this weekend, is two doses 28 days apart.
And how is the Moderna coming out going to change the logistics of all of this?
It shouldn't affect the logistics per se, other than that there will be more vaccine available. Pfizer is delivering the vaccine itself. It's paid for, it's orchestrated the delivery, whereas Moderna is going through government delivery service. So the actual person dropping the package off may be different for those two vaccines.
So they're not even going to start the second dose then until, or is it going to be sort of a rolling thing where they're socketed
right,
away?
It'll be a rolling. So whoever got the shot yesterday, will get their next shot in 3 weeks.
And that dose has been saved.
And that dose has been set aside at the government level, the company level, not at the hospital, for instance.
You know, I'm just wondering, what your playbook is in covering this and how you're approaching it. It's historical. It's a medical story, but it's a history story too.
Sure. It's hard not to get excited when they have a vaccine that seems this effective and apparently very safe. So it is an exciting moment. But we'll have to see how it all plays out.
And at what point will they know? I mean, what are they looking, what's the point on the horizon that they're looking for to say how long it'll last?
Right. So that's going to take some time. They have given vaccine. For instance, they started vaccinating people back in, I guess the first person to be vaccinated was March 16th. So they have some time frame now to see whether those, but it was like 15 people. So they have some sense now of how long that vaccine has lasted. We still don't know how long how long a natural infection lasts. So I've talked to a number of people who say they've gotten COVID twice. It's very hard to prove.
Yeah.
Because you need genetic information from both infections to prove it. But, so an infection itself might only last 3 months minimum.
As far as protecting you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you're protected for 3 months after that infection. Most people should be protected for longer. And the experts expect that the vaccine will be protective longer than natural immunity, which is interesting.
Yeah, it is. And is that going to play a role in whether or not, say, I get COVID? Will that play a role in at what point I'm able to get vaccinated?
So if you've had COVID in the last 3 months, you probably shouldn't put your hand up right now when there's such a short supply.
Gotcha.
By the middle of next year, you'll be more than 3 months past your infection, but also there'll be enough vaccine to go around. And then I don't think people need to be concerned. The trials did include some people who had already had COVID-19, and it appears to be equally safe for those people.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And if you just tuned in, no, I do not have COVID. I was just doing a hypothetical there. My guest is Karen Weintraub. She's a health reporter for USA Today. She's been covering the vaccination rollout here in the U.S. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We, of course, are talking about the rollout of the vaccine. Right now, it's the Pfizer vaccine is rolled out first. It's Moderna that is expected to come out next. And then there's the AstraZeneca vaccine as well. We know that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the Moderna and the Pfizer are that messenger RNA style of vaccine. The AstraZeneca, it's something different?
It is different. It's delivered with a chimp virus that is not dangerous, but it gets into the cells and starts producing the same bit of the spike protein. If you've seen the picture of the coronavirus, it's usually like a gray ball, a little red spike sticking out of it. Those spikes are what most of the vaccines are targeting. And it's just the delivery system or how they get that protein into the body that makes a difference. There's also a Johnson & Johnson vaccine that's in clinical trials. Both AstraZeneca and J&J are expected to report their results in January, February. And if they win approval, we could have 3 or 4 vaccines on the market by, you know, March of next year.
How long does this emergency approval last? Yeah.
So it lasts as long as the emergency does. So COVID disappeared tomorrow, they would have to get full approval. That's very unlikely to happen. So it will last for some time.
The New York Times reported that the federal government last summer passed on the opportunity to secure 100 million additional doses of the Pfizer vaccine. What's the story there? Why would they do that? Do we know?
I think because no one knew these mRNA vaccines have never been, they've been used in a few human trials, but not in large scale. They've never been a product before on the market. Mm-hmm. And so people really didn't know how well they would perform. They've exceeded everybody's expectations. So the government bought 100 million doses of both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, had an option to buy more. They have exercised that option with Moderna. When they tried to and so we're getting 200 million doses of the Moderna vaccine that will vaccinate 100 million people. When they tried to exercise that option for Pfizer, Pfizer said, hey, we're all booked up until the middle of next year. We can get you those 100 million, but not until after June or July of next year.
And to be clear, Moderna and Pfizer, they're providing vaccines for people around the world now, right?
That's correct. The U.S. has bought up a lot of the stockpile, but not all of it. And so both companies have factories in Europe that are manufacturing the vaccine as well. And it's going to be a huge issue providing vaccine, not just to Americans or Europeans, but the whole world. And these mRNA vaccines are generally more expensive. The AstraZeneca vaccine is hoped to be much less expensive and more viable for places with fewer resources.
Right, because it doesn't require those super low temperatures to store it.
That's correct. And the Johnson & Johnson vaccine may be a one shot and done. They're testing that now. And so that would obviously be an improvement also.
What do we know about why some need two shots? Like I just got my shingles vaccinations, yep. Right? What do we know about why some shots require two doses and others, like maybe in the Johnson & Johnson case, won't? What's the diff?
Right. So generally, the second shot is considered a booster. It adds to the protection and it adds to the duration of protection. So you will get some protection from the first shot. We don't know how long it lasts. Both Moderna and Pfizer tested their vaccine as one shot. Because it's so effective, it might eventually be proven to be effective with one shot, but we just don't know. And they both followed up so quickly 3 or 4 weeks later with a second shot that there's no data there. So really, it's just to keep the immune system going. There are two arms of the immune system, one that responds quickly and one that takes longer. The second shot helps build up that longer-term immunity.
I've got a couple of listeners here who say they've been in the Pfizer trial. Let's see what they have to say. William in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, William.
Yeah, I was in that, and I'm pretty sure that I got the vaccine just because I got the symptoms. So I just wanted to give my impressions.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it was very professionally run. And then the second, in my understanding, the second shot is a higher dose. And I did get body aches and chills and uncomfortable feeling for about 24 hours, but definitely worth not getting COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. Karen?
I was just going to say it's the same dose both times, but people do react more strongly the second time generally, especially young people. People over 65, sadly, immune systems are weakened by then, and so they tend not to react as much. And the good thing is they won't have as many side effects. The bad thing is that they may not be quite as protected, although this vaccine does seem to be, I think Moderna is 94% effective overall and 87%, 86% in people over 65.
And do you think William's right that if he got those symptoms for 24 hours, he probably did get it?
It's very likely. Obviously, yeah. I can't say for sure. Some people who get placebos still have side effects.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, yes, he probably did.
Yeah, go ahead, William.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, I think, I guess I learned that a lot of those symptoms are just the immune system, which is not, it's not the illness. And so I just wanted to point that out to people that might be getting it down the line and thinking they're getting sick from the illness.
Okay.
Right. That's exactly what a lot of doctors are saying now, is that it's actually a good thing when you get these side effects, because it means your immune system is responding, is reacting.
It's triggered something in your immune system. Yeah. Exactly. Well, William, thanks for doing that. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sharon in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sharon. You're in the Pfizer trial, too.
I'm in the Pfizer trial as well.
Uh-huh.
And I am pretty sure that I received the vaccine as well. It's funny because people are now asking me if they should take the shot, and I'm saying yes. And all I had was some minor, what I think of as immune system recognition pain at the injection site for the second shot. But my real question is, you know, I've heard a lot of back and forth and craziness about, oh, two shots, how are we going to track all this? Well, you know, there's an infrastructure for tracking immunizations. It's usually used for childhood immunizations, but every single state in the union has an immunization registry. In Ohio, it's called ImpactSys. To me, it sounds like a no-brainer to simply add something to the existing immunization registries to track the fact that, you know, Grandma Smith got her first shot on this date. We can check the system to see if Grandma Smith got shot on that date, and 21 or 28 days later, she gets the second shot, and it's tracked using existing infrastructure.
That's an interesting.
Why is nobody talking about this?
That's interesting, Sharon. Thanks for bringing that up. I remember that when I got my shingles vaccinations, they relied solely on my memory and solely on me having the competence to get back to get the second shot, blah, blah, blah. Karen Weintraub, what about Sharon's point?
So there is a system in place. We'll see how well it works. But the federal government has a system and it is connecting with those state systems. One of the issues is that Grandma Smith, to use her example, if she gets one shot in Florida where she's spending the winter and then goes back to Ohio, we want to make sure that she gets the same vaccine and at the right time frame. So it's a complicated system, but there is a system in place to track that information.
They're supposed to be, at least, and we'll see how it works.
Exactly.
Okay. Thanks for that call. How is the distribution to the states being managed? I think you mentioned earlier, and I just want to clarify, Pfizer's doing itself, or is that the federal government?
So Pfizer is doing the delivery itself, as I understand it, whereas the federal government is doing the other vaccines. Pfizer didn't quite trust, I think, the government to pull it off. UPS and FedEx are delivering the Pfizer vaccine. You shouldn't notice a difference between the two. And Moderna should start, assuming approval this weekend, Moderna will start delivery on Monday.
If I get the Pfizer vaccine for the first dose, I can't get the Moderna vaccine for the second dose, can I?
So you should get the same vaccine for both doses.
From the same product?
Studied.
Okay.
Right. It may not be a problem, but nobody studied it. So you should get the same one twice.
Okay. From the same manufacturer.
Correct.
Right. The vaccine was approved for 16 and up. And I'm wondering, is that a function of it being an emergency authorization? Because I was under the impression that the trials were including children.
So they have started to include younger people.
Okay.
The Pfizer trial started first, and that's why they got their approval from for 16 and up. They have started 12 and up, but there isn't enough data yet to request an emergency use authorization in that younger group. The Moderna trial added teens later, so their approval, their authorization will only be for 18 and up.
Okay. And do you know, is there any speculation or is anybody measuring the percent of Americans that are willing to take the vaccine at this point?
So there's a lot of polling data and it's frankly all over the place.
That's what I thought.
Which is kind of a good sign because it means that people are open. You know, they haven't totally made up their minds yes or no to get the vaccine. They're still thinking about it. And that is a huge concern right now is how many people will be willing to get the vaccine. In order to stop transmission in the community, we need 60, 70, probably 70% of the people to either be immune from a vaccine or from natural infection.
But that's when the effective rate is at around 75 or 80%. And they're saying this is at 95%. Does that make a difference in the numbers that we'll need?
It means a little lower in the population. Okay. And of course, since we have such a terrible outbreak right now, that means there's more natural immunity in the community. But we're still maybe... The estimates are that we'll be at 20-25% natural immunity after this
first
wave.
First round. All right. Well, Karen Weintraub, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you.
That's Karen Weintraub. She's a health reporter for USA Today. She's covering the vaccinations for COVID-19 and the rollout started yesterday across the country, including Ohio. So stay with us. We have more conversation ahead. And if you have a question or comment about the vaccines, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Wexner Medical Center administered its first doses of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine on Monday, starting with frontline healthcare workers at high risk of contracting the virus. But it could be months before enough vaccinations are administered to achieve the critical herd immunity. Dr. Lucy Booker is Senior Director of Medical Affairs at Ohio Health's Oblenus Hospital in Athens. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Nick Kaman is a professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, where he is helping manage the rollout of the vaccine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kaman. Did I pronounce your name properly?
It's Kaman.
Kaman.
Gotcha. Really close.
Gotcha. Thanks. And Dr. Kaman, you were scheduled to be vaccinated this morning. How'd
yes.
that go?
It was great. It was really a wonderful opportunity to kind of experience the process that we've been planning over the last month. And it was great to see everybody that I'd been on Zooms with planning this, to see people in person. And it was a wonderful experience. I'm really excited.
So then you're due in a couple, 3 weeks to get your second dose?
Yes. We actually scheduled for our second dose appointment while we were there.
Okay. And when you get that first dose, are you protected at all?
Well, there's going to be some start to protection, but really the 95% effectiveness was about 2 weeks after the second dose. So, you know, I'm still going to be wearing my N95 or N100 respirator when I go into rooms to see patients, but after the vaccine is given, your body starts to make antibodies right away.
Okay, so even after I get the second dose, whenever that happens, ordinary people, should you still be wearing a mask in public until we can say this pandemic or this is eradicated or at least we have herd immunity? What are we looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, what the studies looked for is, did you get symptoms of coronavirus? They didn't do a lot of studies on, can you carry or transmit the infection? Can you still be infectious? So, you know, until a lot of others are done getting the vaccine, we still need to do all the measures that we're doing with masks and distance and hygiene. And you know, we'll be wearing full PPE in the emergency department and the ICU and the other places where we're wearing it, for sure.
Dr. Booker, your hospital is scheduled to receive 975 doses today. Have they arrived?
So our doses are arriving, and they're coming to Riverside with the shipment for Riverside, which is the other pre-positioned site in the Ohio Health System. And they have the minus 70 degree freezers there. And then this week we're scheduled to start vaccinating our staff here at Oblenis.
How does that work? Are you sending them up to Riverside for their vaccinations, or what's the logistics of that?
Yeah, so we have a really well-coordinated team that's been working on this, on how to roll out the vaccines. And so they have organized the personnel and the training around this, and they're sending that team down from Columbus to do a vaccination administration clinic down here.
Are they sending them down with the freezers, or do the vaccines survive long enough outside of it?
Yeah, no. So they do have a shelf life outside of the minus 70 degree freezer, but it's not very long.
I heard it was like 5 days or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then once you reconstitute it, it's a matter, I think, of hours that you have to use those several doses, which are in the vial.
Let's see. I've got Yamani. You're a doctor, Yamani? Or Yamani? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay, so you treat COVID patients, you're getting the vaccine. Tell us what your thoughts are.
Yeah, so I'm actually primarily at Genesis Health System in Zanesville. So we are one of the 10 recipient hospitals within the state of Ohio. So we will be getting our supplies today, the 965 shots, and they would be giving the shots within the next 2 days. So my comment was actually, we are so excited as people who have been doing this in the front lines, you know, from the beginning. I myself have probably taken care of hundreds of COVID patients. So we are excited and waiting, but I also see a lot of, you know, people who are still non-believers of the vaccine on, you know, the various social media sites and everything. So now, Genesis, we are very fortunate because being a relatively smaller hospital, for example, compared to Ohio Health, mm-hmm. They have put in place like a very nice system of being able to vaccinate everybody who is really in the front line. That includes starting from the emergency department, the physicians, the nurses, the techs, the cleaning staff, the transport people, the respiratory therapists, everybody. Then we are taking the same thing to the ICU level, everybody who comes into contact with the patients. Then my group of physicians, that's the inpatient hospitalist group, you know, everybody who has been taking care of these patients from day one.
Uh-huh.
And then the infectious disease doctor. So that would be the first group of people in our hospital getting vaccinated. So that doesn't even include all the physicians, even the physicians, you know, selectively who is, you know, at the highest risk. So, I mean, the listeners should realize, you know, it's a luxury to get the vaccine. So whenever it's your turn, please, you know, go ahead and get it. It might be a few months down the road. It's not right away.
Okay.
And also, until enough people are immunized, you know, everybody should really practice all the social distancing and masking and hand washing. And we have been telling all these months because you need to get to about 80% for herd immunity to be effective as a society.
Okay.
So that's about 280 million people.
Okay. Thank you so much, doctor. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
So the doctor from Zanesville that just called us said that she's still encountering people who and is worried about people who are doubting the virus to begin with, and then also people who doubt the vaccine. Dr. Booker, what has been your experience as far as treating people who don't think that they're sick with COVID-19, but they are?
You know, I think it's hard because there is a lot of information that's available to people that is not necessarily accurate or correct and doesn't reflect things. And I think I've heard from, you know, I'm a practicing OBGYN, so I am not in the ICU, thankfully. but I hear from my colleagues, the nurses, the hospitalists, the staff working there, that they sometimes have patients who it is not until they're in the hospital and sick that they go, oh my gosh, this is worse than I thought, you know, people were right. And I think it's important to listen to those people. The healthcare community as a whole, people who are there serving to take care of other people went into this profession because they want to help. And when they tell you that something is important and this is for the betterment of our, you know, community and your health, then it's important to listen. There's not a nefarious sort of motive there. We see it every day. And so trying to make sure, sometimes people see their friends and family who get diagnosed and aren't very sick and they think it wasn't that bad of a deal. And we do know a large proportion of people with the virus don't have severe illness. But the people who do, you know, have severe illness in a higher proportion than other viral illnesses that we usually encounter.
And Dr. Kaman, what about you? I've talked to a couple physicians from OSU now that have encountered patients who are denying the disease, let alone, you know, who knows whether they'll get the vaccine or not. But how do you, what is there a protocol for dealing with people like that when they're, as one of the physicians I talked to said, when they're actually dying?
Yeah, you know, education is such a big part of what we need to be doing right now with the whole pandemic and with the vaccine. So, you know, part of what our group is doing with the vaccine rollout is really try to educate people around it. And, you know, I had a patient in the emergency department, you know, just recently, and these are really tough conversations. And the thing that's really hard about it is you can't look somebody in the eye. You're having these over a phone with a loved one that may be dying. And I think it's harder to convince somebody of the severity when they can't sometimes see it. And, you know, because of HIPAA, we can't show pictures of people on ventilators. And, you know, I think some of that, you know, we're starting to see some ICUs and things, but, you know, I recently had a very sick patient with COVID and, you know, the family was convinced that it was a false positive test. And, you know, so there's just a lot of information out there. I think in medicine, we're really used to things changing, right? A lot of what Dr. Booker and I learned in medical school is in the past. And so in medicine, we're used to this idea of, oh, a new recommendation came out, a new thing came out. But, you know, in the public, sometimes that's, well, you told us that we, you know, that this was true. And now you're telling us this. So we got to just get out here and get our message across and, you know, try to educate people. That's all we can do right now.
Let's see, Joe in New Albany, you're on the air. Hi, Joe.
Hey, good morning. You know, the flu shot is required by frontline workers. If it's required to be able to go to public schools, will this be a requirement? Will all frontline workers at the hospitals and healthcare professionals be required to take it?
Dr. Booker, what do we know about that?
Ohio Health is not mandating it for their associates or medical staff, but they are offering it to everybody.
Why not mandate it?
I think that because it is still an emergency use authorization and it is new, that there was a lot of consideration put into this because we do mandate the flu shot, but a lot of parties were involved in making that decision and they thought that this was the best way to go, not to mandate it, but to offer it to anybody who wants to get it, you know, when your turn is up in the tiering priority list, it'll be available to you.
I know that's the same thing at Ohio State, Dr. Kaman. So what has the response been from employees at Wexner?
It's been incredible. I mean, I think we did the same thing that the physician who called in described, the idea of delivering the vaccine based on risk. So your risk of encountering COVID in the work setting. So starting with the ICUs, the emergency department, then rolling out to the COVID units. It's been really tough. You know, we only got 975 doses too, but have over 20,000 employees. So, you know, there's a lot of people that are really anxious to get the vaccine. We're very hopeful that we're going to get a bunch more and we could get it out to people who want it. But, you know, we are doing the same thing. It's voluntary, but, you know, all the signs we're seeing is that it's very effective. And we hope that if we can provide our employees and our physicians and our respiratory therapists and nurses and everyone else the education, that they'll want to get it. And then, you know, just rolling it out to everyone that we can get it to.
Okay, Joe in New Albany, thanks for that call. Dustin in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dustin.
Hi, Ann, and thank you for having me on. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, I think we got Dr. Kaman's name right. I believe it's Dr. Lucy Bucher. I'm calling from Columbus, and we have a historically, the African-American community here in Columbus has a history and experience that makes them hesitant to get the vaccine. My question for my friend Lucy, and say hi to Brian and Aiden for me, is the Appalachian community also hesitant in Appalachian, Ohio there? And if so, what are you saying to them to help them feel more comfortable getting the vaccine?
Dr. Bucher, sorry about that.
That's okay, Anne. No, I think I would echo what Dr. Kaman said. You know, education is a lot of it, and you can educate through formal sort of emails and pamphlets and whatnot, but really it's these face-to-face conversations with friends, family, patients, modeling the behavior, talking to my office staff and talking to, you know, friends about, hey, are you worried at all about this? Why not? And those sorts of conversations, I think, go miles further than giving somebody a pamphlet or saying, here's the scientific data, because, you know, it's a trusted source. And so I try and have those conversations and, you know, try and model best behavior as a leader at the hospital, as a physician, as a member of the community, you know, so I think that's a big part of it.
Okay. Thanks for that call. We will continue our conversation and we'll also hear from somebody who's planning the rollout of the vaccine at a nursing home, a retirement facility, and how that's going to work. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The first doses of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccination are going to frontline healthcare workers as soon as Friday. Health officials will start vaccinating another at-risk group, nursing home residents. Still with us is Dr. Lucy Bucher. She's Senior Director of Medical Affairs at Ohio Health Oblenis Hospital in Athens. And Dr. Nick Kaman, he is a professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, where he is helping manage the rollout of the COVID vaccine. Casey King is Executive Director of Regulatory Compliance at the Wesley Communities. That's a network of continuum of care retirement communities with three locations in Central Ohio. Welcome to the show, Casey.
Hi, thank you for having me.
When do you expect to see your residents start getting vaccinated?
Well, one of our facilities has already been scheduled for Monday, the 21st of December. So it will start then, and the other two facilities I expect will soon follow.
Are you going to require residents be vaccinated?
We cannot require that anyone take the vaccine. As Dr. Bucher said, even for our staff, this is an emergency use authorization vaccine. It's something that people need to make their own decision. I can tell you from speaking with the staff at all of our facilities that They want to help their residents. As Dr. Bucher said, it's a caring profession. And I do not see that many will refuse the vaccine. So I think overall, it will be a good thing. It's what we've all been waiting for. And it's for us kind of a light at the end of the tunnel.
Can you establish, given that it's a congregate care facility and there'll still be restricted movement in and out of it, can you establish sort of a, trying to think of what the word is, like a small scale herd immunity inside that facility?
Well, certainly we would. I think, though, that the vaccine may offer the opportunity for our residents to have visitors come in and see them much sooner. So yes, hopefully we get to a herd immunity type situation in our facilities. Our residents have been without regular visits and family touch since March. So it's really critical. I mean, the isolation they feel, as well as the threat of the virus, weighing those two problems and determining what's best. So I think this vaccine will aid all facilities in helping to open up a little more so that visits can continue.
Dr. Bucher and Dr. Command too, is there going to come a point in time that the news will go out that we're safe and we can stop wearing masks and we can begin to socialize again? Is that how it's going to work, Dr. Bucher?
I'm not sure that there's going to be like a magic hour where all of a sudden everything is okay. You know, there will probably be a gradual return of events and activities, small scale, over time. I think we're in this for a long haul, but this is definitely a light at the end of the tunnel. Like she said, the question is how far away is that end of the tunnel?
Right.
And I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
But the light's there now, so.
And Dr. Command, anything to add there?
Yeah, no, I think I totally agree. When we talk to our resident trainees and our medical students, you know, we tell them that this is now a part of how we practice medicine. COVID-19 is a part of medicine, just like influenza and trauma and burns and other things. It's here. We're going to have to learn how to manage it. The vaccine's certainly going to help. And I agree, it's going to be a gradual process as we roll it out. But, you know, some of the lessons that we learned from the pandemic, I think, will be permanent pieces of how we practice medicine.
Like what? Just the wearing of masks in the hospitals, that kind of a thing?
Well, you know, my hope would be that people learned a lot about how viruses transmit from one another, and maybe they'll learn more about vaccines. I mean, there was this idea of a twindemic, of seeing influenza happen at the same time as COVID-19. And, yeah. And I personally haven't seen a case of influenza yet. And I think part of the thought process here is we're all wearing masks and we're washing our hands, and maybe influenza hasn't been given a real chance to pass from one person to another. So, you know, some of the lessons of distance and masking and hygiene and personal protective equipment, those are things that probably will live past this pandemic.
Let's see. Don in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Go ahead.
My question is, I'm pretty well involved with the medical field, and I was going to participate in one of the initial trials, the experimental trials. But when I found out that 25% of the people were in the placebo group, the, you know, the non-treatment group, mm-hmm. which I understand the importance of, but are they still going to go for 2 years without knowing whether or not they have had the vaccine, or are they just going to roll the dice with those 25% of the people?
That's an interesting question. Dr. Bucher or Dr. Command, do you know about that, how that works?
I don't know specifics, but I would expect for the integrity of the study that they would not be allowed to go get a vaccine commercially for a set amount of time and then would be unblinded, just from basic knowledge of how study design goes. But I don't know the specifics. I don't know if you do, Dr. Command.
Yeah, I think they're still working through that process. I mean, there's an ethical issue here that we have a treatment that we know that works, and we can't deny people from that treatment. And so there's a little bit of a problem here. I know one of the trials is going on at our medical center, and you know, we will lose some of the data if we unblind these studies and we give people vaccine. But from an ethical standpoint, you can't deny someone treatment. So I think the researchers that are doing these are probably having to work through these issues on kind of a case-by-case basis. But, you know, it is an important question. You know, I know the AstraZeneca trial isn't fully enrolled yet, but if we can get that data, we'll have another vaccine. And again, making these decisions of you know, we have to allocate it to a select few people. We desperately want more vaccines so we can get everyone, you know, vaccinated and move from healthcare into vulnerable adults and go down the line. So I don't know the exact specifics, and they may be based on the trials, you know, specifically.
Yeah. Don, thanks for that call. Great question. Casey King, you're partnering with CVS to do the vaccinations. You said starting around about 12/21, the 21st of December. What does that partnership look like? Who's paying for it? How does it work?
Well, this is through the government, the vaccines that were sent out, and they prioritized healthcare workers and folks living in congregate living situations, such as nursing homes, assisted livings. And that's why we're getting the vaccine. What we have to do in that partnership is complete all the background work, all the forms for who is getting the vaccine, collection of their insurance information, so that CVS can bill their insurance companies. For those folks who have no insurance, that bill, I think, is borne by the federal government for their vaccine. There's just a lot of background work that we're doing when they actually come in to give the vaccine. We need to take them to the resident rooms, and we will have set up a small clinic for our staff, similar to what we're doing now with the testing of our staff at least weekly. Nursing homes, based on CMS guidelines, are testing their staff either once a week or every other week right now. So it'll be similar to that setup.
And you're rolling it out to your healthcare workers. And is there a, and I apologize if you've already described this, is there how are you rolling it out to your residents? Is it you're starting with your nursing home residents first, the most vulnerable, that kind of thing?
Yes. Okay. Thus far, we've been told that there is vaccine enough. We have given numbers of staff in the facility, as well as the numbers of residents living in the licensed nursing home area and the licensed residential care facility, or what is called assisted living. If they're in an independent living setting, those residents were excluded from this first tranche of vaccine.
Okay.
So the government is looking at the most vulnerable populations right now. And, you know, certainly we would triage the nursing home residents first if there is a limited supply, and then move to the residential care facility residents. Right now, we've been told there won't be a problem for all of them, and that staff is a very broad definition of staff. So we turned in numbers, and this is every facility that include not only our frontline caregivers and nurses and therapists, but it includes housekeepers, dining services workers, maintenance, environmental services, and administration. We've also included contractual workers and volunteers in that.
Okay. Let's see. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Hey, you hear a lot about herd immunity. Mm-hmm. And as I understand that, it means that such a high proportion of the population can no longer either get the disease or transmit it. But if somebody who's already gotten the disease can get it again in 3 months, and if the vaccines only last a limited amount of time, how can we ever actually reach herd immunity? Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Dr. Command, can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a great question. And one of the things that needs to be emphasized is we're still studying these vaccines. We're still studying coronavirus. We think that because the vaccine is so good that it might give you better or even longer lasting immunity than natural infection does. But there's a chance that there might be a need for another booster. There's a chance that, you know, like influenza, you know, we never really reach herd immunity. So we have to get a shot, you know, every year. So I think these things are being studied, you know, the science will be coming out, but, you know, the way we've been looking at it is because we don't know what natural immunity looks like in people who, you know, weren't recently infected, we're encouraging those folks to get the vaccine. And the emergency use authorization did not exclude those people. So, you know, I think hopefully we can educate folks that even if you had COVID back in March, it's important that you get this vaccine, because if enough people get it, the virus has nowhere to go. And so, you know, we'll learn more as more data comes out.
You know, Dr. Bucher, I think that one of the most interesting things to me is that this is all new. But that's, I think we were talking earlier, a lot of times it's hard for people to grasp that because we don't think things change that much. And we've always had just, you know, I mean, who has polio? Who, you know, we get the measles shots. We have all of these things already in place that we're used to. Why can't we just whip something up and get rid of this? And we're still in the middle of just learning about it.
Yeah, we certainly are. And I think Dr. Command's point was really, you know, we're still learning. We're still a year down the road. These people who are in the trials, we will know better about how they're faring with longer term immunity to coronavirus. So it's hard to wait. It's hard to not know. But I think having faith that there's people working on it diligently who want this to be better and want it to be over, you know, is where I'm putting my, I'm putting my faith in, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody's coming up with the answer.
I mean, it's kind of marvelous, Dr. Command, and it's also really scary because we're so used to having the answers.
Absolutely. You know, it's an exciting time to be, you know, it's a frightening time to be a healthcare worker, but it's also exciting. And, you know, one of the things that I felt today when we were at the vaccine center is just, you know, to take a moment to have a win, you know, and then we'll move back to taking care of patients. But we can't let our foot off the gas. I mean, especially in the public. It's great to hear Casey's plan. To be honest with you, I was a little bit leery. The first allocation went 10% to the hospitals and 90% to the nursing homes. And given just all the work and logistics to put in for this, you know, I was really wondering how it would look for, you know, the nursing homes. And, you know, believe me, we know it's important. 30% of the mortality that we've seen with COVID is in the nursing home. So, you know, we're hopeful that maybe more of the allocation comes to the hospitals, but at the same time, it's great that the nursing homes are getting vaccinated.
Dr. Nick Command, professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center. Thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And also Dr. Lucy Bucher. She is Senior Director of Medical Affairs at Ohio Health Oblenis Hospital in Athens. Thanks for your time as well, Dr. Bucher.
Thank you.
And Casey King, Executive Director of Regulatory Compliance at the Wesley Communities. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.